Welcome to the ANews Podcast. This is episode 25 for August 18, 2017. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information and commentary at the nonsectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial. Starting a discussion on right and left and teams. The following long quotation is from left-wing, right-wing, chicken wing. Quote, the Harris Polling Agency last week released the results of an interesting study. In a survey of 2,209 adults, they discovered that most Americans only have the vaguest idea of the meaning of two important pairs of words that play crucial roles in the national political discourse, conservative and liberal, and left and right. Some of the numbers are surprising. According to the survey, 37% of Americans think liberals oppose gun control, or else they are not sure if liberals oppose gun control. Likewise, 27% of respondents thought a right-winger was someone who supported affirmative action. Furthermore, the survey showed that respondents generally viewed the paired concepts liberal and left-wingers and conservatives and right-wingers as possessing, respectively, generally similar political beliefs with one caveat. In both cases, respondents were roughly 10% more clueless about the wing part than they were about liberals and conservatives. Quote, the label left-winger is broadly perceived to be similar to liberal, the agency concluded, except that more people are not sure what it means. Respondents were asked to define the labels according to what their positions were on seven, quote, political issues: abortion rights, gun control, cutting taxes, gay rights, same-sex marriage, affirmative action, and moral values. This list of issues is preposterous in itself as a symbolic reflection of the political landscape, but that's a discussion for another time. To me, the most instructive category was moral values. According to the survey, 78% of respondents believe conservatives support moral values, while only 40% said the same about left-wingers. In fact, 29% said they believed left-wingers actually opposed moral values. I'm glad the Harris people never called me for this survey, because I would have had to answer not sure to every question. Even after working as a political reporter for many years, I still have absolutely no idea what the American versions of left and right mean, what they mean in an ideological sense, that is. It's hard not to be confused when we call a saber-rattling free trader like John Kerry far left, while a man who keeps a portrait of Lenin on his wall, like Grover Norquist, is considered the very definition of a right-winger. Unquote. My point with the preceding long quotation is that, even, or maybe especially, for people who work with political terminology all the time, terms like left-wing, the left, and even liberal are empty, merely useful for signifying that you are on one side or another, not what that side means. That said, of course, our sides are important. We have emotional responses to our teams that are more significant to us than all the rationality in the world. I'm definitely not asking anyone to give up their sides. I am asking, though, for people to recognize the point of the rhetoric that most of us take for granted, so that we can have more useful and relevant conversations. This is a very brief beginning to a topic that I expect to revisit, because polarized and binaric perspectives on the world continue to be an issue. New this week, Anarchist Ends, Market Means. From C4SS, a site that at its best is exploring some of the practical questions of anarchist possibilities and at its worst smudges the line between anarchy and non-anarchy. The author here, one Emmy Bevan C., gives a nod toward this ambivalence but chooses to define capitalism just as ANCAPs do, as simply an economic system, not as a philosophical and cultural force in itself. Quote, a younger me may have seen in a big spook like capitalism the heart of all the issues we face as a species. This is a grossly limited view. Capitalism, however broken, is a strategy for addressing issues of ethics and coordination, not the source of all of the problems themselves. Get rid of capitalism and many of the issues it attempted to solve will still exist. In this view, problems of access, rights, and equity fall into questions of ethics, while how we herd the cat-like human race is one of coordination. Any decent economic theory is attempting to answer these two questions in one way or another. Unquote. Given that, as well as the explicit expectation of management that is included in that quotation, the article's defense of markets might be interesting in some theoretical way, but I am suspicious.
Bastard Conference 2017. Call for presentations and workshops. Quote, it's that time of year again, now in its 18th annual incarnation, the Bastard, Berkeley Students of Anarchist Theory and Research and Development Conference is a non-sectarian, non-commercial gathering of insurgents who come together to explore and share our unique approaches to anarchy, ourselves, and our worlds. We invite you to add your voice to the conversation. Each year, we select a loose theme to act as a unifying thread for presentations. This year's theme is evil, exploring the various ways human beings distinguish between good and evil and how these concepts shape our lives and projects. What place, if any, does morality have in anarchist practice? How does the concept of evil relate to societal attempts to discipline and control? How do we differentiate between reified, transcendent moral codes and those which are contingent upon our experience? Antifa is one attempt to address the question of evil concretely. This topic can be taken in any number of strange and interesting directions, so we encourage you to think of it as a jumping-off point rather than a thematic constraint, unquote.
Paris, La Chapelle, defending women or attacking the poor? From Bordered by Silence. Interestingly, this piece from Paris reflects also on the question of left and right, as it reports on the right wing's use in France of rhetoric usually associated with the left, i.e. women's rights, and it uses that rhetoric against immigrants, much as the anti-abortion folks in the U.S. used anti-racism against abortion providers, claiming they were interested in killing people of color's children. Quote, in practice, these politicians from the Republicans' party were taking advantage of the sexism in the area, the harassment of women by many men, either alone or in groups, and deliberately exaggerating it to denounce without distinction street vendors, dealers, migrants, and traffickers as being clearly responsible. Easy scapegoats for these partisan reactionaries of the dominant order, of police occupation, of empty, sterile streets, also known as public order, of gentrification and the attacks on the poor that come with it. Easy scapegoats, too, because these are often people who spend lots of time in the streets, whether by choice or from necessity, rather than just spending all their time commuting, working, or sleeping, as they think we should all do. At last, they concluded that the 18th District is a lawless zone, as though the law prevents sexism, and calls for more cops, more ID checks, arrests, ticketing, and targeting of undesirables, undocumented, and homeless people. Unquote.
One dead in Charlottesville, why the right can kill us now. Crime Think's response to the murder and injury of anti-white supremacy protesters and links that to the violence against good people in other spaces, and it reminds us that politicians are not our friends. Quote, but we have to realize that their laws and their order are precisely what produced this situation. A situation in which pipeline company profits are worth more than the lives of water protectors, in which cops murder black men with impunity, in which torch-wielding Nazis can murder those who organize to halt their racist agenda. Unquote.
Teaching Freedom, Thoughts on an Anarchist Education. Again from C4SS by Logan Marie Glitterbaum. This article mentions most of the various anarchist or anarchist-endorsed options in education systems, from unschooling to unionization of the existing system, free schools to the Institute for Social Ecology. It's an odd mix of overview and reform, apparently from the perspective of a concerned teacher and or parent who's a bit more interested in practical options in today's world than what an anarchist education could actually look like. Quote, the choice between public education and private education is essentially the choice between whether you want your kids educated by the state or by capitalism. Both are terrible options for different reasons, but one may seem less problematic to you personally than the other. Some radicals believe that public schools are easier to hold accountable and to have influence over than private schools, and so they advocate things like getting involved in the school board, participating in PTAs, volunteering at public schools, standing in solidarity with the teachers' unions, voting for more public tax funding, and lobbying for better curriculum. Unquote.
Report back on demo in Hamilton in solidarity with Charlottesville. Submitted by Anonymous. A pretty short report back. Quote, the second speaker talked violence and free speech, then offered an idea for an anarchistic response to far-right organizing, saying, some people are using anti-fascism to opportunistically recruit for their parties. But instead, I think it's more interesting for people to have a conversation about anti-fascism in the groups and spaces they are already part of. Talk with the people you like to work with. Take initiative. Call for support. And support the anti-fascist activity of others who share your values. A multiplication of initiatives keeps us from being caught between competing authoritarians. Unquote.
Interview with prisoner James Zelajlija, I probably did not pronounce that correctly, a.k.a. Blackjack, submitted by Anonymous, over a series of 9-plus phone calls made while in prison at Lebanon Correctional from May 2017 to July 2017, James describes how he was accused of being a leader of an anarchist prison gang, the Army of the 12 Monkeys, spent 11 months in segregation with Sean Swain as a result, and how he also found God and became a Christian. To cover all bases, I guess. There is a link to the audio on YouTube.
The unsolved murder of famous anarchist Carlo Tresca. From mainstream source The New York Daily News, this oddly truncated article was originally published in 1998. It tells the story of an Italian anarchist in New York who was assassinated, shot in the back of the head on the street, a mysterious murder that has still not been solved. Quote, the thing about Carlo Tresca was that he looked exactly like what a crazy bomb-throwing radical foreigner was supposed to look like. Wild-bearded, wild-eyed, always passionately shaking his fist and thundering away about the oppressed workers. Actually, he was quite a genial fellow, unfailingly polite to the cops who started visiting him regularly in the wake of the 1920 Wall Street explosion. They're nice boys, he told reporters. Whenever there is a bomb, they come to me. They ask me what I know, but I never know anything, so we have wine. Unquote.
You don't have to like us, but you do have to deal with us, or why your anarcho stink pieces are shit. By Miko U. Last week's piece, this blogger was thoughtful and clarified some things for me. This piece, the writer admits, is mostly angry about and tired of, quote, moral outrage surrounding eco-extremism, unquote. It has some name-calling of its own. Quote, progressivism, humanism, and their ilk are like a stupid child with its hand over its ears, screaming to keep the sound out, only to scream louder with each contradiction of its delusions, unquote. ITS has said they're not anarchist anymore, but this writer continues to identify as an anarchist, and so is a bridge. An uncomfortable, spiky, dangerous bridge to a place most people apparently don't want to go to.
As neo-Nazis grow bolder, the Antifa has emerged to fight them. From Yahoo News. Another mainstream media post that is mostly interesting to the extent that it quotes an article from The Atlantic in one paragraph. This piece confuses Black Bloc with Antifa and posits Antifa as comparable with the violent groups it opposes.
Anarchist group threatens new attacks on tourists in Spain after targeting Barcelona and Mallorca. From The Independent in the UK, some British tourists were scared by an attack on a bus by Iran. Quote, founded in 2012, Iran has expanded through Spain and says it struggles for Catalan independence. The, quote, end of the capitalist system and global injustice, unquote, and feminism, unquote. Iran published a video of the attack online with the caption, mass tourism kills the neighborhoods, destroys the territory, and condemns the working class to misery, and later vandalized bicycles hired out to tourists in Barcelona, while a faction in Mallorca rampaged through waterside restaurants in Palma and ran over yachts while protesting with a banner and smoke bombs. A commenter on A News says that Iran is not an anarchist group, but left-wing Catalonia nationalists. Thanks, Luis Vergara.
What draws Americans to anarchy? It's more than just smashing windows. From mainstream Washington Post, ooh, a gross misstatement of anarchist ideas, using some of the anarchists in the Washington, D.C. area as the face of the Post's misunderstandings / disinformation. Quote, they said they think liberals become complacent when a Democrat is in the White House, letting injustices go unquestioned, but they also think marginalized groups will fare worse under the Trump administration. In their minds, the entire U.S. government should be abolished and reimagined on a much smaller scale. Unquote. This article is faux sympathetic, perhaps in the name of being fair and balanced. They also refer to anarchist leaders. Come on, people.
Uncontrollables, the story of an anarchist study group, from Crime Think. This article is a history of a specific student group, a list of ideas for doing your own, an argument for doing your own, and some actions and events and tactics. It is available as a PDF. It discusses working with other people as well as being anarchist-based, but inclusive.
Plain Words 3. Quote, Plain Words is back with Issue 3, featuring news of resistance in Bloomington. Report backs from efforts of solidarity with long-term anarchist prisoners, imprisoned anarchist comrade Eric King, and those arrested on the January 20th demonstrations against the inauguration of Donald Trump. A look back at the 2013 strike at Indiana University, and an introductory essay on self-organization via affinity groups, unquote. Plain Words is a good example of people doing print and media projects that are most relevant to where they come out of, but also have some more general relevance. There should be more of these.
Podcasts. Horizontal Hostility, Episode 5, Post-Leftism, Fascist Creep, and Wolfie. 96 minutes long. Note, I don't want to spend too much time talking about the person on this podcast whose name I know, whose voice I recognize, and who talks the most and the most authoritatively. Help me not fall into big name-ism. In the interest of that, by the way, it might be cool if this podcast did an episode without Gillis to see more of what the four others have to say. Okay, this episode starts off by rejecting Chomsky as a relevant anarchist, so that's one low bar passed. Gillis defines post-left anarchy, which, despite complaints in the comments on A-News, I think is fine as far as it goes, although idiosyncratic, of course. He doesn't point out that post-left was a name for long-existing criticisms of anarchist tendencies, arguably going back to Nietzsche. Other podcasters point out a vagueness in definitions of the left. Gillis continues to do a bad job of explaining other people's motivations, the anarchist corollary to they hate our freedoms. One podcaster raises the question of labels that ask more questions than they answer, which some of us consider a feature, not a bug. Two people mark an unreferenced similarity between nihilists and tankies. One podcaster has a knee-jerk reaction to beyond left and right as third position rhetoric for those who like their ideas to be constrained by the slogans of the enemy, as if left and right wing is much more than a jargon constraint on the variety of things that people think. It's hard to hear the conversation about the post-left as much more than one social group not liking another social group. Gillis argues against himself, reappropriate responses to Alexander Reed Ross's book. Predictably, I find the disagreement about what it means to define a term the most interesting, since the podcasters actually have skin in the game in that exchange. As the narrator of this podcast, I have to add, as someone who was around for the things that Gillis talks about, antipol.net, the study group, etc., his capacity to just throw shit with no backup is without parallel in my daily life.
Anarchy Radio, August 15th, 2017. Always an hour. This episode has an intro and starts on time. Alice versus Jay-Z regarding Antifa. Alice effectively cuts short a caller. Charlottesville. Jay-Z questions the significance of media coverage, justified or not, discusses lowest common denominators, finds very slim potential silver linings. Crime Think's alarmist headline thinks that, quote, all the anarchists are post-left, all the anarchists are anti-civ, unquote, and questions what that means. Google controversy. Fires in Portugal, Greece, flooding in Sierra Leone, cholera in Yemen, legendary Tigris River about to being completely dry from drought and overuse, opioid deaths, oceans rising around South Carolina and the South. Alice corrects terminology. Report on New York trip, including the base in Bed-Stuy. Quote, really a cool space, unquote. Gardening class, martial arts, a library, and Alice is impressed by their storage. John meets a friendly anthropologist. Alice wants to talk about multiple museums and extols one of the parks that was created by neighborhood activists who were then priced out of the neighborhood in what is literally a textbook example of gentrification. But that's okay, because trees. More conversation about the changes in New York, what neighborhoods are hip, etc. Alice likes the retro Geico ads with the cavemen, not the lizard ones. Alice ends with a story about her dad trying to fight a Nazi. this episode can be celebrated as ITS and Nihilus are not mentioned once. Hooray!
Hotwire. CrimeThink announces its new weekly news podcast hosted by Rebel Girl.
The Brilliant with Soren. There's a new Brilliant episode up.
Number 56, Charlottesville, Triumph and Tragedy in the Struggle Against Fascism. Roughly 100 minutes long. This episode from the Ex-Worker podcast is in memory of Heather. This is a considered production with background and context, interviews of local organizers, lists of some of the most recognizable fascist organizers, thoughts on tactics, how to work with non-anarchists, and it doesn't get confused about working with politicians. They point out that fascists are starting shell Antifa groups and doxing people who sign up for them, and provide a link to a list of known actual Antifa groups to join.
TFS Radio, resisting LNG storage in Tacoma, and August 19th, prison solidarity. An hour long. Lots of promo at the beginning. This episode is two interviews sent into the final straw, rather than either William or Bursts. The first is an excerpt from an interview with Malik Washington in prep for August 19th to end prison slavery in the U.S. The second is a conversation with Indigenous activist Roxanne Murray about struggles against a liquefied natural gas storage facility proposed for Tacoma, Washington. Sean starts at about 11 minutes in. He revisits the rat utopias and the failure thereof and comes out as a supporter of hunter-gatherer production as the only way to slow down population growth to a sustainable level. Interviews start at 18 minutes.
New and active forums this week. In the Path of Totality, started by Anonymous, I would like to extend to you an anarchist server Discord invite, started by Anonymous, Education, Persig, and Subject-Object Splitting and Non-Splitting, started by, shocker, Emil.
Yo, it's black, flex.
This is August 18th, topic of the week, working together. This week we're talking with Klee Benali from Arizona, and we're taking a look at collaboration among anarchists. Anarchists working together with other anarchists, along with anarchists, working or not working alongside non-anarchist groups. More often than not, anarchists working together on projects and help provide support, solidarity, and mutual aid to their friends. However, this is not always the case, or as clear-cut as it may seem. Why have you or your anarchist project chosen to not collaborate with other anarchists who may have been able to offer support? What were the results? Looking back, would you have done things differently? On the opposite end, have you ever been hesitant to work alongside other anarchists, but in the end were pleasantly surprised by the collaboration? If anarchists can't work with other anarchists in real life, is there any hope? Or is it as simple as saying, we're on the same team, but we just want to do our own thing and build two, three, or many anarchist projects to flourish throughout the world? What about anarchists who are openly hostile to other anarchists and their projects? What is the best way to approach a difficult situation like that? Is it important for your anarchist practice that in some way, shape, or form, anarchists manage to get along with other anarchists, even if they may use a different label? What happens if we don't? On the other side, are anarchists collaborating with non-anarchist groups, such as Especifismo idea of social insertion? What has your experience been of collaborating as an anarchist with non-anarchist groups? How would you compare the experience of working with more liberal groups to working specifically with anarchists? So, what are your thoughts, Klee?
Oh, that's a lot to tackle all at once.
Yeah, it's too many questions.
I'd like to pick a point to start at. So first, thank you for having me on your show, Yate. Very interested in furthering the discussion in the range of work that we're trying to figure and configure regarding the challenges of working together. And so I'm coming at this from a place or a position of my experiencing being not as an anarchist, you know, towards some kind of solidarity, unity, or collaborative arrangements. I'm coming at it from initially being, an indigenous Diné traditionalist who you know, through political work has found strong affinity with anarchism, not necessarily anarchist, because of the range of antagonisms in the past that have sort of come with, along with the occupied territory, if I can say. But then coming to a position where I've just been sort of like, you know, very clear in asserting that I'm an indigenous anarchist, and using that as a space to sort of, you know, destabilize actually some of the folks that I work in my own community, who are coming at some of the organizing from, you know, sort of more reform or liberal positions. And so my assertion has actually been one of furthering tension, you know, not actually, you know, trying to clarify the lines in relation to collaboration and not willing to collaborate with the state, and really pushing more of sort of anti-colonial position as part of the anarchist in environment and destabilizing a lot of spaces. So I'm not necessarily, you know, a bridge builder on those levels, but you know, part of the history that I have is that I've worked in a lot of coalitions. I've worked in, you know, across a range of political spectrums in different political campaigns, and not setting aside my politics, but actually that process formulating my conclusions in relation to the politics that I sort of embody to this day. So, you know, I can talk about a range of experiences and how I sort of come to that, but also some of the perspectives that I have that, you know, help lead me to, you know, author the Accomplices Not Allies piece, which is very much sort of a critical, you know, addressing the critical tensions that we face, you know, liberal and radical, specifically if we're talking about anarchist relationships or configuration, not you. And I can also address specifically an experience that I've had with the over 10 years now, or about 10 years. I think we're coming up on our 10-year anniversary here at Tullahoan Info Shop. So that explicitly being an anti-colonial and anarchist, anti-capitalist space. And then I also had about 4 years as part of, with the Tullahoan Info Shop, as part of a project called the Arizona Radical Coalition, which, you know, was patently anarchist. It was anti-authoritarian, but it was a network, a regional network of different radical projects that linked up, you know, to sort of formulate a mobilizing network. And so that was the intention there, was explicitly how do we work together with different, you know, anarchist and other radical anti-authoritarian projects and be as effective as we can, you know, and do we? And I have lessons learned with that.
Well, I think the reason why I picked up as soon as you gave an inkling of an interest in this topic, the reason why I immediately responded to you was because I'm finding now that, especially because most people find each other through the context of the internet, that the internet creates a particularly monotheistic approach to collaboration. So in other words, you only collaborate with people if they agree with you on a sort of unknown and very long laundry list of bullet items. And so a lot of what you're talking about is being willing to deal with the people who were face to face. So why don't you start out by talking about the info shop and examples of where the strengths of collaboration have been for you and where the weaknesses have been.
Yeah. When we first started the info shop, we actually traveled throughout the region and just like tried to source information regarding different radical projects and how they were formulated. And that actually turned into relationship building. You know, it was really the relationship that was existing here in the small community of so-called Flagstaff occupied territories, right at the base of the Cola Fleet or the San Francisco Peaks, which is our holy mountain that we've been defending from scary expansion development. But there was a youth group called Youth of the Peaks that was an indigenous youth response to the larger sort of coalition building with environmental justice groups. It was very much like the sort of like cookie cutter nonprofit campaign for like social and environmental justice, with like the footnote that there's indigenous people at the leadership, but there's still like these larger big green nonprofits, you know, sort of pulling a lot of the heavy, you know, or playing a lot of the power behind it. And so we actually had a bit of attention within that coalition, and it, in many ways, it produced this youth group that was all Indigenous high schoolers who formed this collective force. They were able to mobilize like hundreds of youth in this small community. Like hundreds of youth were coming out, all dressed in camouflage, all messed up, like ready for like some serious action. And they were, of course, they were actually targeted and, you know, criminalized by the state. They faced extreme repression. They were, you know, a SWAT team came in, a gang task force SWAT team came into their high school and interrogated several of the young women, Indigenous youth leaders in this crew of folks, or very vocal, you know, public personas, and they were targeted, and like that crew of folks were like, hey, we need a space to organize out of. And at the same time, we had an Indigenous youth project called Out of Your Backpack Media that also needed a space to do workshops, and we were like, hey, there's been a couple of info shops in the past. They've been like the sort of classical you know, white anarchist spaces, and I was party to like them to some degree, either the formations or volunteering. And, you know, we said, hey, we need our own space. Let's just start this, then we'll figure out how to operate and build up, like, you know, our politic in as we go along. And it was really fluid. The relationships were really awesome initially. You know, we created a pretty strong, like, standard and process, especially because we were working with young folks. They wanted a pretty high standard in relation to, like, involvement, like what comprised the collective. I won't go into the historical details, like, you know, our overall formation, which I'm already sort of doing. But the reason that's important, that backstory is important, is because it was on our terms. We already had working relationships and affinity based upon our cultural lines, and the politics were secondary. The politics were basically a sort of avenue or channel of how we engaged with the rest of the community and the political forces that were, you know, facilitating desecration of our sacred sites, you know, our threatening our cultural survival. And so we decided to do that and formulate the space on our terms and orient it, you know, to serve those interests. And so it was a very different space, and to some degree, it still is today. You know, we've gone through the gamut of, like, you know, the large collectives to two people or one person holding it down at times, you know, to, you know, the collectives imploding because of interpersonal struggles and strife. The relationships, you know, in some cases, I think, like, the politics, like, folks have less of, in my experience with collective organizing, what some of the Achilles, I guess, moments, if you will, were that, you know, folks had more of an affinity with, like, the personal relationships on an end, where they're willing to, like, compromise their affinity with the political sort of, like, aspirations, which, you know, it's interesting because I think it's a double-edged sword, right? Like, you want to have each other's backs. You want to, like, put your friends first. But when it comes down to, like, standards and, like, and what I mean by standards are, like, you know, the sort of, like, cultures that we've created and agreements that we share in relation to the visions and purpose of the space, based upon, like, what we can consider political lines, you know, then there's some serious shit that you don't, lines you don't cross. You know, like, oppressed, you know, like, just matters of domination and violating consent, for example. And so, you know, those were the challenges, which are very typical. I'm sure you have your set of experiences as well in relation to the projects you've been part of, where, you know, shit's blown up and imploded. And, you know, unfortunately, we've had to compost the collective at one time, and we're still healing from that. You know, there's a lot of trauma. But, you know, it's in terms of relationships, you know, we try to be as explicit as possible in relation to what our politics are and what our, you know, like, we don't try to, like, set as much expectations as aside from, like, here's our assertion, this is where we're coming from. Like, we want to have each other's backs, and we want to cultivate a space that can do that, and not just, like, carve out an autonomous space where we feel good about patting each other's backs and, you know, we're holier than whoever else, you know, who's not as enlightened. But, you know, it's like, no, this is a space for conflict. This is a space where we have carved out based upon experience, and we're mounting, you know, that experience through our movement memory and the memories that we carry on from our, you know, elders and other folks who have informed our process of engagement, how we can be as effective as possible. I don't know if that's answering your question. You can, you know, stop me at any time and ask for clarification if you want.
Sure. You had mentioned that you had a second example that you wanted to talk about that was more explicitly about anarchist collaboration.
Yeah, and that's sort of with the Arizona Radical Coalition, but it's also part of this formation called the Dine Autumn Anarchist block that was called for.
Sure.
During
before you actually go into another detail, this was the set of meetings that happened every X number of months and rotated around the state for a couple of years.
Yeah. So the Arizona Radical Coalition was called by the Dry River Resource Center, Direct Action Resource Center, which is in Tucson, or so-called Tucson, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
At one point there was like five info shops in Arizona, and we were presented with that question when we were at a conference from Local to Global Justice, and folks were like, hey, how come we're not sharing resources? How come we're not talking about best practices? Just real basic stuff. And so Dry River called for a meeting of folks, and more than just the info shop showed up. There was a very clear interest and desire for that sort of sense of collaborative, engagement. And so a lot of folks, I think there were 60 people at the first gathering. And it just, the momentum kept continuing from there. But yeah, it was on every equinox and solstice, different communities at the radical sort of spaces would host the meeting, and those communities would set the terms, like, or the theme for the engagement. We tried not to create an organization. We really wanted just a space where we could discuss and build a network. And ultimately, we articulated that we wanted this to be a mobilizing network in its most effective forms, especially one where we could share resources throughout the region.
Mm-hmm. What were the strengths and weaknesses of that collaboration? Because my recollection was that while you did succeed at doing events, you didn't succeed necessarily at much more than developing relationships with each other.
Yeah, there were different needs. Like, I think where different communities were at, like, some of them were more fragmented and dealing with a lot of, like, you know, trauma. Others were, like, really focused on specific issues and like, key points and trying to mobilize. And at some points, there was really great resonance where everybody recognized, hey, you know, set shit aside and focus on getting shit done. And, I mean, the fact is, like, everybody, there was a lot of different groups that maybe not necessarily got along personally, but they set shit aside to be part of this network and, mm-hmm. you know, work stuff out on different levels as part of the network. Like, one of the gatherings, you know, folks wanted to focus on, like, different interpersonal, like, dynamics and ways to, like, help heal the traumas that they were facing in the communities, and invited each, you know, space that was coming to do a presentation about, you know, or facilitate part of the discussion or a workshop on how they dealt with that internally and externally. And it provided sort of a reflecting point for folks, especially with other folks who are working on shit, you know, across the region, to help clarify and orient a direction for addressing some of these hard issues. So, you know, there was great camaraderie. I would say, like, the strengths were just that we were all communicating, and it was an active network. We were able to share and mobilize, like, and respond to, you know, when the NSM, the National Socialist Movement, was trying to mobilize the march in Phoenix. Like, you know, I remember the Phoenix crew saying, hey, we don't want to have a conference, a mini conference, you know, of radical folks. We want to have a mobilization. So that's what we want to use our time with this force for, and it was effective. You know, I mean, that was the one of the best uses for it, because we were able to organize behind the scenes, you know, very effectively, and then, you know, operate in the streets.
Okay.
And so
go ahead.
What was the question?
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say some of the drawbacks were I mean, we always get caught up on semantics and, you know, some of the issues in relation to, like, the politics, like defining the politics. Like, I remember some of the indigenous people in our collective with Kalahoan at the time made a statement: the moment that ARC, the Arizona Radical Coalition, becomes a banner that people march behind, it's dead. And I think there's a lot of people that wanted to see it as that kind of entity. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, the biggest drawback. And, you know, I think one of the biggest issues, and it still to some degree isn't fully sorted out to this day, was this, like, you know, we had a lot of, like, you know, non-Indigenous anarchists who felt very entitled through the process to push and open up the discussions that were started on an anti-colonial basis regarding sacred places, but they didn't follow, like, the traditional cultural protocols. That there was just, like, a point that was missing in the communication regarding that. And so Indigenous folks who were part of the hosting process, you know, felt that that was a great concern, and things deteriorated from there. That was actually one of the last ARC meetings. There was a lot of sides to how that broke down, but, you know, that was a big issue.
And would you say that that kind of a disconnect between, we'll say, the anti-colonial set of thinkings and practices and terminology and anarchism or anarchist ideas, that that was actually a significant fracture, or was it smaller than the fact that driving around the state was resource intensive, or was there a more specific reason than that why the ARC stopped meeting?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was a resource base. I'd say it was political. And that was, like, part of a strong part of the break. It's just, and it was a basic political misunderstanding. Well, but it's not to say that, like, that moment was insignificant. It sort of illustrated the sort of larger disconnect. And there's been a range of conversations since that have helped sort of address that. And I think, like, those lessons have helped strengthen some of the projects. I would say that, like, my experience in relation to, like, the sort of, because on it, to be real straight up, like, Phoenix and Tucson anarchists have been, like, a big source of inspiration from my analysis and, like, non-rejection of anarchism in totality, because of just the analysis that they put forward and the ways that they've meaningfully had folks back. Like the Phoenix Class War Council, for example, I think did a shit ton of fucking work and held it down to help to formulate the call out for the Dene Altum anarchist bloc, the DOA bloc that would challenge ARPAIO, challenge, you know, NSM and a range of other entities as well. And that was just a powerful moment, you know, and that was it, you know, and all it ever should have been was just moments. But those kinds of moments are what really build the trust and demonstrate that we have each other's backs in a meaningful way. And so for me, that's, like, a big set of that, you know, because the breakdown is about mutual aid. So it's an internal anarchist, you know, challenge that we had with ARC or the Arizona Radical Coalition. This is, like, consent and mutual aid. You know, that means communication and, like, not just a one-way sort of, like, hey, we're going to push our agenda. But that's, unfortunately, a break that I think was, you know, sort of a demonstration of the sort of breakdown within regarding the anarchist position that was asserted within ARC as well.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Klee.
Anarchy 101 question and some answers. In this segment, we take questions and some of the answers and responses from the website anarchy101.org, a user-moderated Q&A site for anarchists to answer questions on anarchist thought and activity. Most questions on the site have a lot of commentary that we don't end up reading, but is certainly at least half the fun. The question this week is anarchism left or right? Answer number one, there are 8 answers there, and I'm not going to read all of them. But answer number one is, historically, anarchism arose out of left-wing movements. That ground has been covered in other places, so I will leave that at that. However, if you're intent on forcing all political ideologies and philosophies into this narrow framework of understanding, and somehow want to find some utility in it, I think it's also worth examining and understanding the history of the framework. The idea of there being a spectrum from left-wing to right-wing originates from the French Revolution, where those who supported the establishment sat on the right and those who sought to overturn it sat on the left of the assembly room. Throughout history, movements, ideologies, and philosophies have been categorized as left or right-wing according to a large array of criteria. The definitions from Wikipedia are a pretty good summation of this array. If we look closely at that array of criteria for assigning the labels left and right, the common threads that appear are that leftist traits tend to be opposed to the establishment, concerned with change and progress, whereas the traits associated with the right wing tend to support the establishment and are concerned with opposing change and maintaining existing or reverting to historical arrangements of social relationships. Even fascism, which is another ideology that defies the left-right dichotomy, can be placed on this one-dimensional axis using these boiled-down criteria. According to this analysis, anarchism is, broadly speaking, a left-wing grouping of philosophies. As opposition to hierarchical authority, which is the common thread uniting all anarchists, can't be reconciled with supporting the establishment or conserving existing social relationships. Anarchism is inherently opposed to the reality we live in. The question is, why would you want to use a reductive framework to try to all-encompassingly organize the history and current reality of political thought? When to do so, you have to reduce the framework even further. The only use I can see is if you're trying to make sense of politics objectively, assigning essential meanings to the names of ideologies like anarchism and communism, which are supposed to mean the same thing to everyone. The problem is that politics is subjective and can't be made sense of objectively. Trying to do so is a particularly bad habit of Westerners, and more specifically, Anglophones. Maybe it's because we're raised in liberal democracies, and the political language of liberal democracy, the words, phrases, and concepts that liberal democracy uses to define itself, and, as it happens, our native political language, doesn't allow for subjectivity. Liberalism, after all, is a child of the Enlightenment, a period of time when we became obsessed with science, assigning essential meanings to things, and naming them to add to our ever-expanding lexicon of nouns. And so it makes sense that the political language and intellectual technology that our upbringing equips us with is unable to deal with the fact that ideas and their names mean different things to different people at different times, and so words and concepts like anarchism, which are highly disputed and whose locus of ideas, the desire to not be ruled, doesn't have anything to do with the loci of the objective right-left axis, progress, change versus conservation stasis, are something that we have trouble assigning essential meanings to. My solution has been to shed the political language that liberal democracy uses to define itself, to stop using it to try to understand ideas that are opposed to it, to stop trying to assign essential meanings to things and instead look at what things mean to me, what they mean to other people, and acknowledging any differences between the two, instead of trying to assert an objective judgment of them. Of course, I'll still assert subjective opinions, like anarcho-capitalism isn't consistent with anarchism, but that doesn't mean I have to assert an objective judgment. I can say anarchism means X to me. To me, that is what anarchism is, even though you disagree, without asserting that someone else's anarchism is objectively wrong. Instead of trying to understand an ideology or philosophy from an external locus, I try to understand them by seeking out their own loci. I don't try to understand anarcho-capitalism by looking at it with anarchist concepts and frameworks in mind. I go to its origin and focal point, classical liberalism. It's also why I use the term anarcho-capitalist instead of some derogatory term, because it's the endonym anarcho-capitalists use to describe themselves. Anarchists have over hundreds of years developed their own frameworks of concepts and language to describe and discuss anarchism. They are the most relevant and useful frameworks to anarchism because they originated within it. Next answer. I like a preceding answer as a starting point, but I would also argue that anarchism, as a lived practice as opposed to a rigid ideology, transcends the left-right framework, which is ultimately, at least to my thinking, based on statist politics. The concept of politics being limited to a left, right, and center is tremendously limiting, and as a previous poster hints at, anarchists do not fit neatly in the fenced-in pastures of the left, having some places where our politics are more similar to the libertarian right. While not generally sharing any actual affinity with those people or their goals, they might call themselves libertarian, but when pushed, they are almost all minarchists, not anarchists, and they still hold tight to sacred cows like property and worship spooks like the free market. There is so much conversation on this thread. So, and the final answer that I'm going to read is, personally, I find these labels left and right monotonous at best. They march one's worldview, activity, and lifetime right into a narrow field pre-plowed for politics and battle, Left, 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 right, left. The muster called, the inspection over, identity complete, off to war. To illustrate in brief, like some right-wingers bandy about, I desire to be left alone, unmolested by others, coercing me to conform to their way of life. Like many of those on the left, I seek more conviviality and intimacy, which adds to my life, and I'm greedy for more. However, I have no love for the idiotic reifications used in place of my living relations, such as sovereignty and community, respectively. I have even less patience with the nagging morality and fractiousness which accompanies them. Once my own life, which, need I really say this, includes those I resonate with most, comes to be regarded as comparable and/or identifiable with an ideal, a sort of feather of Mott, I realize quickly that my life has and my desires have just become devalued accordingly, since at the end of the proverbial day, that ideal will always be held in higher regard than me by those who weigh it against their fictitious feather. Economy seems to me the raison d'etre of the nation-state formula in that it provides both the very opening, market, agora, and regulatory function, policing, laws, rules of the game, schooling. Left and right may be different moral sentiments regarding the logistics of moving things around and where, that is, whether this ought to be more or less competitive or cooperative. However, neither wing questions the notion of thing, which is the basis of commodity, resource, value price, standard of living, and all the rest of economic conceptualizing. It is perhaps here where I vigorously reject the distinction between left and right and the whole meta-concept of political economy within which this opposition arose and remains relevant to this day. As always, if you don't like these answers or have your own question to ask, visit anarchy101.org and join the conversation. This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel, written by Jackie. The editorial was written by Chisel. It was produced and narrated by Chisel and a friend. Thanks to Aragorn and Klee for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, get books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material at littleblackcart.com. And for news and up-to-the-minute commentary, go to anarchistnews.org.